I think the question I would want to answer is, do I feel good about where we are and where we're going as a ministry and an organization? And my emphatic answer is that while we haven't reached the end of the story, and what I say 5 years from now might be different than this moment, I fully believe that we are in the place we need to be. We are progressing in ways that we want and need to progress to fully form ourselves as a ministry and organization. And I'm truly optimistic about where we'll be next year and 5 years from now.
Let me welcome you to episode number one of Mindful Leader. This is an idea that I have been kicking around for a long time. My name is Dennis Shaw. I'm a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference. And the conversation is going to focus on what it is to be a mindful leader. And because I'm a Mountain Sky Conference elder and I have a lot of experience in the area of finances, I thought we'd sort of start there. Eventually, we'll grow out from there. I would just invite you to register this and indicate that you'd like to be a regular part of receiving this. It's my hope, my plan, that for the first four, five, six, seven, eight episodes, I'm going to do this every Monday as my release schedule. And then I may get to a place where I do these about once every 2 weeks. We'll have to wait and see how that all works out. But that'd be sort of the plan that I have developed for this. We're going to interview today Angela Thomas. And Angela Thomas is currently the Chief Financial Officer of the Mountain Sky Conference. And if you ever pick up your Book of Discipline, I'm sure everybody does that every single day, once or twice a day. And there's a position there called the treasurer. And that's the position that Angela is holding. She is the treasurer, chief financial officer for the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church. Angela is a graduate of Mississippi State. When you hear her talk, you'll realize that she's from Mississippi. She has a bachelor's in accounting. She has a master's in business administration from Millsaps College, which is also in Mississippi, and that has a Methodist connection as well. She worked in the private sector for about 20 years, and then she became the business administrator, excuse me, at Denver Trinity United Methodist Church. She moved from there to be the assistant treasurer and controller, and in the Missouri Conference. And then when the Mountain Sky Conference put out a note saying we're looking for a new treasurer, chief financial officer, she applied and was approved for the gig. So she's been here with us since January of 2020. She's a musician. She's a very good pianist. She's a certified public accountant. She's a certified church administrator. And she, like many people, is a big fan of Brené Brown. So that's always, I think, interesting. And my daughter-in-law is a big fan of Brené Brown. I've read a lot of Brené Brown. I like Brené Brown. So I'm going to begin here with some questions for Angela. And Angela, welcome first. Thank you for having accepted my invitation to speak to us.
Well, thank you for having me and for inviting. It's always a treat to be in conversation with you.
Well, you're very kind. Why don't you I think I have an idea what your duties are at the Mountain Sky Conference, but for those who may not totally understand what the Chief Financial Officer or Treasurer does, what is it that you're responsible for?
My work is largely twofold. Intersecting responsibilities. The first is a technical aspect of my work, and I'm responsible for the business operations and finances of the organization, i.e., the legal entity that is Mountain Sky Conference, and the trustee functions, payroll, personnel, finance, accounting, auditing, the day-to-day work of being a legal entity. Regardless of the nature of the organization. And I fall underneath the umbrella that we at Mountain Sky called responsible stewardship, which includes not only direct conference entity work, but the conference annual conference at large. So all of our clergy, all of our churches and ministries within the conference. And that includes, again, trustee work. We have a property and liability group program that I administer with the Conference Board of Trustees. We have a pension and health benefit program that is conference-wide that I administer with the Conference Board of Pension and Health Benefits. And then the day-to-day operations, annual reporting, regulatory filings, things that we must do because we're a business or a legal entity that largely fall underneath the Council on Finance and Administration. So I'm not a solo act in all of this work, but those are my core technical responsibilities in concert with these leadership teams, my staff, and the executive leadership team of the Mountain Sky Conference. The second part of my work is purely relational in nature, and that is literally outreach to our local church communities, to our staff, laity, and clergy within our churches and other ministry organizations and settings. And while on one hand, it is the more important part of my work, the technical aspects are largely mandated by third parties. We don't get to choose to do them or not do them. But the more important and the growth and ministry part of that work largely comes in building relationships, inviting people into space, and making space for hard conversations, for transactional encounters and training, but also support of our collective shared work and ministry.
Well, you indicated that there were sometimes hard conversations, and also you indicated that sometimes there's issues that we don't get to decide. Can you give me, for example, just one example out of where those might be and one of those things you have to deal with?
Well, easy example and very timely today. We are required by the United Methodist Church, by our General Council on Finance and Administration, to provide annual reports of statistical activities and data across all of our churches and entities. And it is sometimes a very tedious task. Nobody really looks forward to it, January, February of each year. But it's really important work. It's valuable information. And it's an opportunity for us to share in some celebrations and look for ministry opportunities. But selling that as a ministry opportunity is sometimes a bit of a challenge because unless you're a super nerd, like most of my colleagues and friends in church administration are, it is a chore. And so sometimes we just have to, grab our coffee, sit down, and work through that chore, and then move on to our more interesting or exciting aspects of work.
Well,
Another is filing
maybe if you
our
had a better person was the statistician from 2008 to 2020, it wouldn't be so hard.
Oh, I'm going to argue that one. I'm going to argue that for sure. Some things just bring us joy in different ways, and statistics typically does not bring joy to a lot of people.
No, I know. Yeah. The joke there for those that are not aware was that I was a statistician for about 12 years. So, yeah. We commented earlier that you've been in the gig since January of 2020. I sort of think back and wow, 3.5 years is almost 3.5 years. There's been a lot of speed bumps in there. Can you tell me what some of those speed bumps have been for you within the wor world of responsible stewardship?
Sure. And I have to preface with most of what I and our leadership teams have experienced are not unique. We're not special in most of these. General Conference 2019, which kind of had this roll forward effect of kind of some continuing concern and disarray and dissatisfaction within the denomination itself. Has really bubbled the last few years. COVID, which I put on the list of lifetime things I never would have imagined, at the level that we experienced it in early 2020, and then moving forward and still having some fallout from the pandemic. Boy Scout bankruptcy, which again is not a new thing. This is on those long-term issues that thousands of people are dealing with, has presented unique challenges to us legally and financially, and with respect to looking at how we do ministry and care for vulnerable children and vulnerable adults and make that a priority in all of our settings. And then we came into a new fledgling conference, which in 2020, 21, 22, and 23 even, we're still identifying ourselves. We're figuring out who we are and how we carry on the work of United Methodists and Christians in this context. And part of the pitfalls or bumps, speed bumps that I've encountered specifically with Mountain Sky Conference have simply been transition, learning, identifying our shared culture and kind of establishing who we are and what we're about. And when you're in that process, there are some simple day-to-day things that become problems because you're encountering things and you don't have the baseline to go, oh, here's the question, one, two, three, here's the answer. We have to work through collaboratively and find the common ground. And we've started from a place of we're new and learning and growing and maturing. So that's been a unique challenge for me coming into this role with Mountain Sky. But by and large, we're really not special. The world has just been challenging and difficult and surprising in ways that most people couldn't anticipate. And learning to adapt through that and then kind of anticipate, well, what's the next worst case scenario? Because we feel like we've hit one. It's part of learning to serve and work together as a community.
Well, it sounds like to me that you actually, in spite of those speed bumps out there, you sound like you've weathered them well. What have you relied on to help you weather those experiences? What can you tell me a little bit about how that's happened?
Sure, that's a great question. First and foremost, I have to say, my goal and where I try to focus my work and my energy and my mind is around, what are we really trying to accomplish? What is our real mission? And not let the bumps and the things that come up that you never could have imagined derail for too long, kind of get my footing back in place. I really have relied heavily on the Responsible Stewardship Leadership Teams. What a great group of volunteers of laity and clergy that are active and engaged and, kind of, we hold each other up and we hold each other accountable and support and encourage one another. A great staff team, small but mighty and, optimistic, but really, really stubborn and learning not to get too bogged down in the sadness of some of the work that we're doing, the anxiety around what's the next big unknown? Because we've all learned to say something's coming. We don't know what or when. And mostly kind of settling into new space, new home, new work environment, and recognizing when I'm super fatigued or super overwhelmed, owning it, getting some rest, finding things that bring me joy, some music, an hour at the piano, some exercise, watching, those signs that I'm not being mindful of my health, and knowing I've got people to call me out when I'm starting to get a little bit discouraged and overwhelmed, and just, picking up every day going, today is going to be a good day, and knowing things are going to happen, and just saying, that's okay, that's life. And again, I'm not special in that. This is something we're all dealing with. And some days I think I've got a great rhythm, and some days I just, shut the computer down and go have a good cry and take a deep breath and jump back in.
Well, my time of trying to help on various conference activities, sometimes we get this inverted expectation. We say that our mission is to serve the local church, and then we can sometimes find ourselves in the role where occasionally there's this borderline expectation that local church is here to serve the conference. Of course, I don't think that's bankrupt. We say our mission is to serve the local church. Where do you think you do that the best? Where are you the proudest of what's going on?
You know, technically speaking, and because a lot of my work is purely technical in nature, technically speaking, I think my corporate background and then local church background as a volunteer leadership team member and employee bring me a broader scope of experience than a lot of local church people have, because they've been through a church environment throughout their work, volunteer or staff. And so technically speaking, I bring some competence and maybe a little less fear factor in having to try new things or navigate a new rule or requirement from the government or what have you. And so I'm a little braver sometimes, and I'm able to kind of share that sense of encouragement and sense of the worst thing is you break it and you redo it and, you know, don't sweat it kind of attitude to folks in the local church, in particular in the back office administrative functions, who often don't feel a strong sense of either technical support and resourcing, which I can provide. But more importantly, I think what I bring to the conference and to our local churches is freedom to say, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what this document means and this new regulation. How do we navigate it? And easing some anxiety, giving them brave space to say, I don't know what I don't know. Help me. And opening those doors for them to, you know, have a resource to either talk through a question or say, point me in some direction, give me some technical resources, give me a link, give me a document. And mostly, I think what I'm most proud of is inviting, again, mostly administrative people, but not exclusively, into space where they know at the end of the day, the most tedious of tasks on their desk support ministry and make a difference in their local church and in their community. And for them to feel seen and appreciated and valued as ministers, not as, you know, the bookkeeper or the treasurer or the, you know, human resource person, but for them to see and experience someone who says, you're doing great work in ministry and I appreciate you, is invaluable.
And it sounds like to me that an element of what you illuminated, what you talked about with pride, was the fact that because you've been there at the local church, that gives you some insight that you find helpful. Is that accurate?
Yes, absolutely. And I feel like in a lot of ways, regardless of your role in ministry and in the local church, most days you work with a sense of, you know, thanklessness or invisibility. And ideally, you know, the role of the administrator is to be behind the scenes. You don't want to be visible, because that's usually something's going on. But it's also helpful when you know you've got colleagues who have your back, understand what your unique struggle or perspective might be. And just having that network that says it's okay to be frustrated in the moment, and it's okay to have to learn a new thing and be afraid you're going to mess it up.
Well, so this is some of the things you see as the most optimistic, the most pride. Where has been serving the local church the hardest, the most difficult?
I would say for myself in this specific role, it is most difficult to work through an issue or work with a group, leadership group, congregation, staff, when the local church or ministry, extension ministry, lacks a common vision about who they are, why they exist, and what they're called to do in their context. And when I say that, what I mean is a body of multiple leaders in collaborative, collective work together. If everybody doesn't clearly understand the single big path that they're on, might be an 8-lane freeway or it might be a 2-lane road, but if they don't all have a clear understanding of their fundamental mission and identity, they will struggle with inability to make decisions and move forward with action. So they're struggling to have strategic work. They end up kind of feeling a sense of anxiety that fuels some fear, that fuels some trust issues within the community. And they end up kind of competing for space and for resources and for visibility. And they're just not on the same page. And it's not a deliberate or conscious situation. But I've worked with churches, particularly around leadership teams working together and around some policies and procedures and prioritizing what we can do in a small church, medium church, large church with our resources. And without fail, the most common issue becomes we're not on the same page. And if you handed them your church mission statement to everybody in the room, you would have double the number of answers as you have people in the room. And
as to what it means,
it's hard to navigate. Yeah. What does it mean? How do you interpret that into action and ministry? And that's really hard. That's a cultural systemic issue that's hard to navigate. And it takes a lot of dedicated, concentrated effort to kind of surpass that. And most of the time, you don't realize that's a thing. You don't know you're in that situation because you've lived in it for so long that you don't quite recognize it. The symptoms are different than what the fundamental issue appears to be.
Yeah, it's been sometimes my experience that you like some of these vision and mission statements to have enough specificity to give you some direction, but vague enough to be adaptable over time. But what the dilemma you have with that is sometimes that in that vagueness is that people create their own specificity that it wasn't necessarily in people's mind when they drafted it. So over time, it becomes this idea that it's hard to negotiate, hard to fathom where that came from. It becomes who they are.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating to be in ministry as a leader or as a church member, ministry participant, and be in that space because there is this underlying tension that's so subtle, you don't quite put your finger on it. You just know something's off.
We're not ready yet to talk about the 2024 budget that we're still working that. But I think that there are some things that have been going on with disaffiliation. And I know that as you read the United Methodist News Service, you read articles, things like that, of what's going on outside of Methodism, of what's going on in the United Methodist Church. And the topic of disaffiliation, churches leaving the United Methodist Church, comes up over and over and over again. I know there's some things that are going to happen at annual conference. Can you sort of walk us through where you are in middle of May, 2023, and sort of tell us what's going on? That, and of course, it could be subject to change in 2 weeks. But where do you think we are right now?
Right now, we're nearing the end of a disaffiliation process, and I've termed this the class, the group of churches currently in process. We started this process early January was the first kind of action deadline for churches who were thinking of or intending to seek disaffiliation. We've walked through a number of significant steps in the process, from information gathering and negotiation and identifying specific needs with those churches. And we are near the end. We are at the very last stages of processing paperwork and getting records shared and doing just the mechanics of disaffiliation. We anticipate we will have 38 churches disaffiliate at annual conference in June. And the way that works is they've gone through the process, the votes, the technical and legal requirements to reach that point. They've paid the cost of covering obligations past and future for clergy, retiree benefits specifically. We've come to an agreement around the property of the church and how that moves forward. The local churches have set up their own new entities and new church names, and they've gone through the legal and tax and technical work on their own to get themselves established, anticipating the vote passes and they disaffiliate. What will happen at annual conference is each district superintendent will submit individual petitions for each of the churches who seek disaffiliation. They will answer some basic questions around the process and address any specific concerns with those individual churches as they walk through their group of churches. And then we will have a single ballot for each district that includes all of their churches. Now, it won't be a vote for the slate. You will still vote on individual churches on the list, but for the sake of time and efficiency, they'll be balloted by district. Once the vote occurs, presumably all will be approved. Approved churches will finish the very, very last step. The conference will actually record new property deeds and effectively addressing the language around the trust clause, which is part of the United Methodist Connection. And once that paperwork is filed related to property deeds, then they are officially disaffiliated from the United Methodist Church.
And there are some conferences that are going to have special sessions in September, October, November. I have the impression that we're not planning that. Is that accurate?
That is correct. We are not planning that. This is a topic that's been discussed extensively, particularly over the last 7-8 months. And the Board of Trustees and Conference Executive Leadership Team agree that we've had a number of years for churches that wanted to enter this process and disaffiliate under paragraph 2553, which expires 12/31 of 23. They've had opportunity to do that. And we really want to allow this last group of churches to disaffiliate, complete their process, move forward in their ministry with our blessing and goodwill and God's grace, and close that chapter and focus our energy and resources on supporting the churches who remain in the connection within the conference, and really have a conscious, deliberate effort and time to resource and support and help heal those communities that have been through this difficult process, either remnant congregations or churches at large who had the opportunity and conversations and made the decision not to disaffiliate. We also want to be positioned logistically around whatever new thing comes up at our next general conference in 24. We anticipate something will replace 2553. We don't quite know what it looks like. And we really want to have a clean stop between one process and a potential new process so that we can support our churches and communities effectively and graciously and do our best work around that. So we don't anticipate another special conference in the fall. And of course, that could change. But I feel it's getting clearer and clearer that we will have the one in June and we'll be done.
It would be a blessing. I know that there's a lot of stress on a lot of people in a lot of different ways, both on the churches that are disaffiliating and then the churches, frankly, that are nearby that are disaffiliating and the impact that it has on their neighbors that are not. So it's a tricky time, very, very tricky time. If you recall, there was a thing called the Actor's Studio where the host would ask like 8 or 10 questions every time that he would have a guest on. And I want to develop Dennis's Actor's Studio question. Mm-hmm. And the question I think I'm going to sort of work with for a while until it's not the right question is sometimes sometimes when you've been in a position for a while, you can step back and say, gosh, I wish I had known that when I got the gig, when I came on. I mean, you wouldn't have known in January of 2020 that we were going to have COVID. You wouldn't have known fully the impact of Boy Scout bankruptcy and all that. But as it relates to sort of maybe the setting of the Mountain Sky Conference per se, or however you want to go, what is it that you sort of wish that you knew in January 2020 that you now have learned over the last 3.5 years?
That's a great question. I hope you ask all of your guests this question.
I'm going to ask everybody this question.
I think the one thing I would encapsulate as a summary, and again, to a degree, I'm going to say I'm not special in this, but I wish that I had had a better understanding or anticipated better how new and young and immature Mountain Sky Conference was organizationally. And by that, I mean, again, brand new, you know, just coming together from former Rocky Mountain and Yellowstone conferences, new thing, new culture, new ways of working and working together, and coming from outside the conference and the jurisdiction, I did not fully recognize how young and how unsettled, undefined so many aspects of this new thing were. And I liken it in some ways to a couple of television programs that a friend of mine recommended. The first was a French language show. And I knew walking in the door, my French is super rusty. I will not follow all of the dialogue and all of the action in this program without subtitles. I knew from the get-go that was going to be a thing. I got halfway through the series and said, okay, I'm feeling pretty good now. I don't need the subtitles anymore. About 6 months later, the same friend said, hey, you check out the show. It's based in Scotland. Now, Scotland is an English-speaking setting. And I started this show, and between the dialect and the accent and the slang, I couldn't understand a word that was being said in this program. And after a couple of episodes, I gave up and had to turn on the subtitles. But I had a set of expectations from each of these settings. And in one, I anticipated fine. I knew my weaknesses and how I would best engage with this French program. But with the Scottish program, I was completely surprised that I couldn't function without some support and help by way of subtitles. And that's kind of my experience now. In hindsight, I didn't know what I didn't know. But the one thing I would say is I wish that I had really recognized and appreciated how early Mountain Sky Conference was in its formation and development, and still is, by the way.
And I want to validate what you said. I mean, even though chronologically we have been together for, 4.5 years? Between General Conference 2019, COVID, just learning how to deal with each other over the tremendous distances, we don't have a new normal yet, and I want to applaud those that are trying to get to a place where they are trying to help create that. I'm with you. I thought in January 2020 there we had gotten to some new normals, and I was dead wrong. I was dead wrong. And I like your imagery. It's almost like we needed to be able to be able to have subtitles in mm-hmm. some of these conversations we're having. So that'll work for me.
Oh, good. Well, and I did get a great source of encouragement last year. The annual conference treasurers group had their annual meeting in person for the first time. And one of our sessions discussed transition and consolidation and merger and new conferences and different ways of working together. And the keynote leaders in that session were treasurers from conferences who 12 and 14 years into being a new thing were still trying to figure stuff out. And so I thought, you know, we're not doing so badly. But you, I think we expect more instant things just fall in place, and that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So we've all kind of reset our expectations and settled into this is a marathon and not a sprint.
Yeah.
And run accordingly.
I think it's a good image. I like the subtitle. I like the marathon image as well. I used to be a marathoner a long time ago. Angela, thank you for taking your time this right here before a weekend, giving us the time to help discuss some of these things. Was there anything that I didn't ask that you sort of wish that I had?
That's a really loaded question, Dennis. And there are many
I didn't mean
questions
for it to be loaded.
You could ask. There are many questions that we could ask and bounce around, but I think the question I would want to answer is, do I feel good about where we are and where we're going as a ministry and an organization? And my emphatic answer is that while we haven't reached the end of the story, and what I say 5 years from now might be different than this moment, I fully believe that we are in the place we need to be. We are progressing in ways that we want and need to progress to fully form ourselves as a ministry and organization. And I'm truly optimistic about where we'll be next year and 5 years from now. And I hope I'm still around to enjoy the adventure.
I love that answer. Angela, thank you very much. It's my plan to bring you back again at a future date. My plan is to hopefully talk a little bit about the 2024 budget as much as we can before annual conference. If we can do that, I may bring you and maybe another guest back to talk a little bit about that. But thank you very much for your time. And I hope those who've listened to it will find it helpful as well. So God bless you. Well, let me say thank you to all of you for having listened to our first podcast. I want to say thank you to Angela Thomas again for her having taken time from her day to help us out with this broadcast. I've got another three or four people already lined up that I'm going to talk to. And if you've got anybody you think you want me to talk to, don't hesitate to send me a note. My email address will be in the show notes. And when I say show notes, if you hit the information tab on your podcast reader, you should be able to see notes down there that I've put prepared for this. So we're off to the races, and I hope that you found this meaningful and enjoyable and profound information. If you've heard this and you want to share this with others, don't hesitate to send the link on to people at your local church that you think might be informed by it. If you look on your podcast vehicle, whatever it is, I use Outcast, but however you use it, you might type in Dennis Shaw, you might type in The Mindful Leader, or you might type in Mantuan, Mantuan, or look in the information, the show notes, and look at my email, and I'll get you registered that way too. So again, I want to say thank you to Angela. Thank you for listening. Look forward to coming to you again another week. God bless you. Bye-bye.